Hey folks, this is Anatoly and you're listening to the Solana podcast. And today I have with me Packy McCormick, author of Not Boring. Hey man, good to have you.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me on.
So you're an author and you're also an investor. How did you get into crypto?
Yeah, so I got into crypto back in 2013. I read Fred Wilson's blog post on investing in Coinbase, bought a bunch of Bitcoin, I think 38 Bitcoin. And then I went on a trip to Oktoberfest and I felt bad about it. I had just quit my job. And so I was like, you know what, instead of spending money when I'm unemployed, like, let me just sell these stupid Bitcoin and I will pay for the trip. So because of that, because of the pain of selling then, I kind of avoided it until kind of earlier this year, later last year, and really, really got back into it as I was talking to a couple of companies that I was thinking about investing in and thinking about kind of the intersection of crypto and the metaverse and how kind of an open economy just fits so much better with that vision. And since then, I've just gone deeper and deeper and deeper down the rabbit hole.
So you held Bitcoin because you can sell it? It was just too big of a pain in the ass.
I felt so bad about selling it and missing out. I think at the peak, it was like a $2 million plus mistake. And so I was like, you know what? I'm out of this for a little while.
That's funny. What do you guys invest in?
Yeah, so I run a small fund, $10 million fund called Not Boring Capital. And we really invest across stages, across geographies, across verticals. For the first, I'd say half of the fund, it was really kind of traditional investments. I'd say for the second kind of $5 million in the fund, it's been pushing up against the 20% non-qualifying limit. I'm actually investing in my first Solana-based project this week, which is yet to be announced, so can't talk about it, but something in the real estate space and something I'm super excited about. But you know, doing as much crypto as I can in there. But I still think, you know, some use cases are perfectly well suited to crypto and some are really not. There's plenty of things kind of in Web2 that I'm super excited about as well. So really trying to balance kind of investing across both.
So these are, by traditional businesses, you mean like software, internet-based ones?
Exactly.
Cool. I mean, I've been in crypto for like the last, like, I can't remember. It feels like a decade and I can't imagine what the world is like. So what are people building?
It's a good question. So today I talked to a company, for example, that is making it a lot easier for a restaurant to order the food that they need. So like right now, if you're a restaurant and you're ordering food, you're getting a bunch of PDFs from suppliers every week that aren't even searchable. And then you're going through the 6,000 items on there and picking something. So there are still a bunch of these huge kind of unsexy categories that are completely, you know, ripe. There's some security stuff that kind of bridges into crypto, but you know, there's one, again, kind of stealth right now, but is also dealing with some Solana projects on the security side that I'm really, really excited in, but they're also securing Web2 projects. There's, you know, some fintech stuff. I wrote about a company called Unit yesterday. There's definitely a little bit of kind of mental gymnastics that I have to do to be super bullish on fintech and super bullish on crypto. But I really think, you know, adoption cycles are going to be super long, and there are some really huge opportunities on that side too. I think everybody's trying to make the existing system that doesn't work, make it work better for people. And so I'm all for things on, you know, either the Web2 side or in crypto that make finance better for people.
The mental gymnastics I'm curious about. I always thought that crypto is just part of this general story of software eating the world. Is that kind of your take on it too?
Totally. So, I mean, you know, I wrote about Solana and I wrote this in the piece, but that I'm a kind of maximalist minimalist, and that's cross-chain, but that's also, I don't think crypto is going to eat everything yet or maybe ever. Just like, you know, on the internet, Web 2.0 was really about, you know, the dynamic interfaces where you could interact with each other. While there were companies like Facebook and Twitter and, you know, all of this kind of social media companies that were more interactive, there were a ton of huge companies built during kind of the Web 2 era that weren't social media, that weren't real-time interactive at all. And I think the same thing will play out. I think you need to pick the best stack for whatever you're building at the time. And so I think, you know, we'll see a world where a lot of stuff moves to Web 3 and hopefully even things that don't incorporate crypto become a little bit more liquid, a little bit more decentralized, and a little bit better for people. But I don't think that crypto is, you know, the answer to every problem that the world has.
So when you look at a company that is building out this, like, you know, the basic, let's convert PDFs to a searchable database. Yeah. It's that feels like something that should have happened 10 years ago, right? Like, in your mind, like, or at least.
Totally. Well, I mean, I think there have been attempts in that space, actually, and some of them haven't worked. There have been different approaches. People have tried to do marketplaces and different things like that. I think what changed in that particular case is that over the past year, one, restaurants are super cognizant of cutting costs and getting profitability to the best possible spot. And so they're more willing to try new things. These people are taking an interesting approach where they're not actually changing the interface that the restaurants interact with at all. They're just making everything behind it more powerful. So things have been tried, but you know, there's people are trying new approaches every day. I mean, I'd say 80%, because that is the literal max that I'm allowed to do, is 20% crypto out of my fund. So 80% of my investments are non-crypto, and there's a bunch of stuff that's growing fast and is really exciting. I think the other interesting thing is that there are a bunch of companies that aren't going kind of full decentralized, but are incorporating maybe a DAO in one aspect, where they have members who might be running something and want to vote on what that thing is coming up, or will incorporate NFTs in a particular part of the business where it makes sense. So I think we'll see that blur a little bit more. But even within companies, they'll be doing some Web2 stuff and some Web3 stuff.
So you still see, like, I guess, you know, in a way, you're bullish on non-crypto and the rest of the world as an investor.
Yeah, my worldview is bullish tech and innovation. And, you know, I think, like, if you're talking on the, you know, I have a medical device company in the portfolio and a machine learning company that helps make sense of medical documents and all of that kind of stuff, I don't see a need yet for crypto. And maybe there's, you know, better decentralized kind of storage of that information in the future, so it's not a centralized entity. And so over time, I think more and more and more of it will potentially become decentralized as the tools catch up. But for right now, that's just stuff that needs to improve. There's a company called NexHealth that I invested in that has this really complex kind of long-term plan to first sell SaaS into doctors' offices, use that to connect to EHRs, use that to build out APIs, use that to build out a platform to ultimately try to make it easier for people to just hack on medical products, because right now it's such a pain in the ass to do anything in the medical space. Like, I am super bullish on that kind of innovation, because I have no idea where my, you know, if you asked me what doctor I went to 2 years ago, I'd have no idea. If you asked me what my stats were, I'd have no idea. So anybody fixing any of those kinds of things, I'm super bullish on.
Man, I mean, the internet is basically 30 years old, right, at this point. And it's wild to think that we're still connecting just data.
Totally.
Data to formats.
It's why I can be bullish on all of this. Like, the internet is still early in terms of penetration, and then crypto is a tiny, tiny, tiny percentage of that. So there's just a lot of room for all of this to run.
It feels then like everything is happening at the same time. We're still onboarding the world to the internet, and we're now part of the internet is kind of being onboarded to crypto. Is that something that you first saw? Like, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, most of the world, I think we're over 50% now, right, is internet connected. I think it's just more and more things that were not internet connected are being tackled. I think a lot of the, you know, big obvious opportunities get taken, and then people realize, like, oh, shoot, I think I've seen in the past week a couple of companies that are making it, you know, easier for truckers to pay for gas and track those expenses. Like, there's just all these kind of big things that touch the physical world, where primitives kind of needed to be built first. You needed kind of banking as a service type things to make it really easy for companies to issue cards, to build for specific use cases. So I think it's all just a matter of what primitives have been built and then what you can do on top of that. And that's why, you know, one of the reasons I'm so excited about crypto is because you and other folks in the space are building such interesting things for other people to build on top of.
Since you kind of, you have, I think, a more maybe practical or realistic view, since you're dealing with non-crypto projects that are trying to get revenue, right? Like, that's generally the pitch to an investor.
Yes. Over a long enough time horizon, some of them need to get revenue.
What do you see in crypto itself as promising to use crypto in a way that actually increases revenue for that business? Like, what are those things?
Yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know, one of the fun things about exploring both sides is that I really try, when I look at any crypto project, to understand kind of like what business physics laws it's enhancing. Like, businesses are businesses because people buy things the same way all over the place, or people like to make money. kind of, you know, people are the same. And I think all of this comes down to people, obviously. Solana comes down to how many developers build on top of it and how many people use that. And so obviously, I think one of the big important things is the ability to build network effects by giving people ownership. And I think the idea of using ownership in crypto to even, you know, have negative customer acquisition costs, to be able to essentially make the price of something negative to be able to get adoption, to use crypto tools for, you know, retention and network effects, I think is one of the big things that excites me. I think it's also just moving way, way, way faster, because as soon as, I mean, like, look at Ethereum and Solana, right? Like, Ethereum, strong network effects, people building on top of it. And then Solana comes in and kind of looks like the same chart, but faster. And so you can get these network effects, but then somebody else will come in with network effects that are even faster. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how those types of things play out.
By negative acquisition costs is a really interesting topic, because that's basically yield farming, right? Like DeFi, like the foundation of DeFi, how I get users is a lot of these projects give away their coin. Do you think those patterns is something that you're going to start seeing in traditional businesses? Like they, you know, AMC popcorn, if you buy AMC stock, is like some form of liquidity mining, right?
I think the challenging part, right, is that people want either money pretty immediately or they want ownership in something. And it's really hard for Web2 companies to give away ownership. Like, there's a ton of paperwork involved. There are platforms that are trying to make that a little bit easier, but it's still really hard for them to give away ownership the way that if you're a yield farmer, you can give away your, if you're a DeFi protocol, you can give away your token to attract users in the beginning. So maybe there will be some things that Web2 companies steal and bring over from crypto, but I do think that's one of the uniquely beautiful things about it, is that it's this, I mean, we'll see. It's still so early, right? But that it's this beautiful thing where because you're early, you're able to earn more. And then because you're there, you actually support the network and make the network more secure and all that. So there's actual justification for it. But it's just a kind of split, a shift in who gets the ownership of things, which I think is kind of beautiful.
You think that like the Web2 properties, like like Facebook, Twitter, that those are a risk for being disintermediated by crypto?
Yes. And a long enough time horizon, absolutely. I don't know what it looks like. And I think the early attempts to do it have been a bit skeuomorphic. And that's kind of one of the things that interests me here, is that, like, you know, BitClout was, I guess, kind of interesting, but it was Twitter with coins. And I don't think that the next social network will look like Twitter with coins. I think it will look like something that, you know, is maybe wallet first, or maybe kind of in a 3D world, or something that looks different, but then kind of achieves a very similar end. And so I think, yes, 100% they're at risk, but I don't think that they're at risk from something that looks like a clone, but adds a token.
Man, I love that word, skeuomorphic, because that's kind of how I started thinking about it. As I'm talking to a bunch of projects that are trying to shove crypto into what is a Web2 thing, like a Web2 product. Do you as an investor see that as like a red flag, or like, okay, maybe this might work and you should try it, but clearly you're going to have to iterate away from it?
I think it comes down to what you're trying to do. I talked to an investor who is way smarter than I am about this the other day, and she was like, you know what, it's actually for me, because I invested, you know, the Series A and beyond, if one of my portfolio companies came to me and said that they're going to incorporate crypto at this point, that would be a red flag, because that means they don't have product market fit and they're trying to figure out how to get product market fit by doing something else shiny. There are other projects, like there was something that I was talking to that was totally Web2 based, but that asked people for feedback. They were having challenges with retention. They were asking users to submit information. They were thinking about how to reward them. And for something like that, particularly when it's so early, like, I do think that adding crypto into the project makes a ton of sense. If you're trying to incentivize contribution and improve retention, crypto is an amazing tool for that, for the right type of community. So I really think it depends on what type of product it is. And, you know, some things I think will look skeuomorphic, might work in some cases where you're ripping out, you know, an internal kind of reward point and replacing it with crypto. I think that can make sense. But when you're trying to just shove money into something to see if you can attract more users, that's when I feel like there's a bit of a problem.
So like Reddit coins, you think that's going to work?
I don't know. I mean, they're at least early, and I feel like they're a such an interesting community of people. And there's, you know, the idea of karma's kind of existed in Reddit for a while. So maybe making that a little bit more fungible and exchangeable is interesting. I mean, there's a bunch of behavioral economics on the idea that if you just pay people for stuff, you actually fuck up incentives in a bunch of different ways that are hard to predict. So it could be tough. Like when you actually assign a dollar value to something, you make people think about it in terms of the dollar value. And they're like, wait, I just spent a day moderating the subreddit for a dollar. Like, are you kidding me? So I think you need to get that part right. Right. Like where you can give them a million karma points and it doesn't matter, but you can, then it becomes a dollar. Then there's an issue. So I think people need to be wary of that, but certainly where there are internal kind of scoreboards, giving people a way to actually monetize that, I think is interesting.
Have you looked into play to earn stuff?
Yeah.
Okay.
I wrote a piece on Axie. I think it's so fascinating.
I'm terrified of a world where everything we do is like, you got to do this to get your 20 extra cents, like, or your dollar. Right? Like, it just sounds like a nightmare.
I know. I mean, I am of the mind that dystopia is probably overstated because people have to opt in kind of at every gate. And so, you know, I've had conversations with people where they're like, isn't it wild that we'd be spending time in the metaverse? Like, isn't that dystopian? And then you think about how we spend a lot of our time right now. We're like in a two-dimensional screen. Like, wouldn't it be kind of more fun if there was an immersive environment that we were interacting with here? And would we just continue to choose to do the 2D version until the 3D version got realistic and fun enough that we made the shift? And so there's going to be those gates at all times where people can opt in or not. You know, a lot of the people playing Axie right now are in the Philippines, were unemployed, you know, thanks in large part due to COVID. And so their options were don't do this and figure out some other way to make money or start playing this game that you might be playing anyway and actually make money while doing it. So that's an incredible option that people have. But you also don't see a ton of people in the West flocking to Axie to make a couple of bucks because the trade-off doesn't make sense for them. And so I think the trade-offs have to make sense for people, but everybody has agency to some extent and will opt into the things that make sense for them.
I, you know, when I played like Ultima Online, I bought like digital items in that game on eBay with a cashier's check. So I get this idea that you can get really into a game.
Totally. And then, you know, you stop playing Ultima Online and that money is just kind of wasted, right? And so the idea that you could easily kind of transfer that item to the next generation of person that wants to go all in on the game is kind of nice. It means that you're accumulating something while you play. And I think, you know, over time, those experiences will fade more and more into the background and it will feel less like play to earn and it'll probably just be play and earn. But there's going to be a transition period where you kind of have to just be bold about it. And like the play to earn piece has to be kind of front and center. But I don't know, we can go to like deep down the philosophical rabbit hole on all of this. But, you know, there is a point at which like at some point in the future, I don't think this is debatable, but at some point in the future, we're not going to have to actually work to eat, to shelter ourselves, to have clothes, all of that. And so what do you do that provides kind of meaning, right? Like humans are programmed. I don't think we're going to evolve into a world where we feel comfortable not having to work for anything. And so people will find new ways to make meaning.
We're going to be NPCs in each other's games.
Seriously.
How much do you pay attention to the like regulatory side of it? Like, do you think like World of Warcraft is going to have to file like your W-2s?
Man, that part is, I've said this before, I do not envy the IRS or the SEC trying to keep up. Like, I do this all day, every day. I'm fascinated by it and I can't keep up with everything. There's going to obviously need to be a total kind of paradigm shift in the way that this stuff is tracked and managed. Like, even taxes, like I am going to figure out at the end of the year, whatever the best tax software that I should use to make sense of everything that I've done all across Web3 this year. But if I didn't, the chances that somebody sitting in the IRS for like my small potatoes amount of money is actually going to be able to like go and figure out what I did is minuscule. So I don't know how they're going to do it, but there needs to be a common sense way that doesn't end up in just this like constant clash.
Yeah, all my degen ape trades.
Seriously. Like, I mean, the amount of people, there was a thread that went viral on Twitter a couple weeks ago that was someone being like, hey, by the way, did you know essentially that when you buy an NFT, you're also selling your coins at a gain, like, and you're going to have to pay taxes on that? There's going to be a lot of people who get hit pretty hard at the end of the year.
Yeah, I'm curious how that's going to play out. That's wild. I mean, like, one of the investments should be like, here's Stack Software for all your crypto shit. Like, that seems obvious one.
Yeah, there are a few people working on that. I mean, the other one that I really want to see, I've mentioned this 20% limit. So if you're not an RIA, if you're not a registered investment advisor, and you manage over X dollars, you can only buy 20% non-qualifying, crypto's included in that. I really want to see someone build RIA in a box. And RIA means that you need a chief compliance officer and you need all this stuff. And so somebody who makes that easier to do and easier to set up crypto funds, I think is going to make a killing as well.
I mean, that seems like something that a smart contract should be doing, right? If you're investing purely, most of that compliance is just transparency. Right. It's like, am I doing the thing that I said I was going to do?
Totally. But some of it is there a person here looking over what I'm doing? Like, the rules are written for a world in which it makes sense for a person to look over something instead of computers talking to each other. So there's going to be a transition period there. But over time, yes, it makes a lot more sense as a smart contract. And I'm interested to see. Are you familiar with Syndicate Protocol?
I'm not.
So Syndicate Protocol is, I think, mostly on Ethereum at this point, but it makes it easy to set up investment clubs, SPVs, a bunch of other things. And so brings a lot of kind of the investing, group investing activities on chain. Is there anything similar on the Solana side?
I don't know yet. Like, the network exploded in terms of people building on it to the point that I can't track.
That's awesome. That's a milestone.
Yeah, that's a milestone. It's just like... So now I'm like, okay, go back into the weeds, back into like optimizations.
How do you balance? Sorry to turn the mic on you, but very curious. How do you balance your time right now?
In a poorly, I would say. Like, I think that there was like an effort to get the word out to as many developers out there that this is how you build stuff and these are the reference implementations. And now that's kind of moving on its own, I almost feel like me putting energy there is going to have such a small amount of like gain. So I think of it in like value against replacement kind of terms, like if just very dumb engineer perspective, maybe that's a pretty good one. I don't know.
No, I mean, it's if you can view yourself from kind of a remove like that and be like, look, I mean, that's the goal of running a company or an organization or a protocol is how can I replace myself in as many different spots as possible. But are you in the Discords? Are you like getting degen on some of these projects and stuff too?
I used to be more Discord, like just telling devs, this is where the docs are. This is how you unblock that like compiler error or whatever. Like, I was in there, and now there's enough people doing that. I'm like, okay, I'm useless here. So in the early days of Metaplex, helping out like people set up their Heroku servers or whatever, right? Like, I spent like a little bit of time doing that, but then all of a sudden our engineers kind of took off with it. I'm curious how you think about DAOs. Like, are these truly like amorphous blobs where nobody knows anyone else and there's some voting mechanism that you trust? Or as normal people, like actually that do this stuff, it feels to me that there are like humans that all know each other and they're like kind of coordinating with software.
Yeah, there's been kind of a meme going around, I feel like this week again on Twitter, where people have been talking about like, oh, it's impossible to get fired by a DAO. Like, why not just get hired by a DAO and then don't do anything because who's going to fire you? I love the idea. And I love the fact that crypto makes it possible to organize and incentivize huge groups of people across the world and get them to work in the same direction. I also think there's going to be a ton of challenges. Like, people are very used for the past, at least, you know, couple hundred years since the dawn of the corporation, people are very used to working in hierarchical structures where there's somebody making a decision. And so I think there will be kind of a balance that gets struck in a lot of cases. Like, delegation, I think, will get more and more and more popular. And ideally, there are things, you know, there's some projects being worked on that I'm excited about where people's kind of on-chain contribution and activity and resume is almost tracked, and maybe you give more power to the people who've contributed the most and proven expertise in a certain area and all of that. So I think a lot of things need to be worked out there. I think that we're in the stage now, frankly, where like a lot of DAOs will not do as well as a centralized thing would have done, but then some DAOs will just do this crazy emergent stuff that never would have been possible in a normal kind of structure that was a little bit more hierarchical. So I think we're in like the let a thousand flowers bloom phase of DAOs right now, where emergence will produce some really interesting stuff, and then emergence will also produce some total failures, and we'll see kind of where it all shakes out.
The politics in DAOs, I feel like, are... like corporations of politics, right? There's definitely like politics in large corps. And I feel like small DAOs of politics. And that's not typically not true of a startup.
Yeah, I think that's true. Although it can happen fast at a startup. But you know, the interesting thing that happens at a startup is if the CEO allows it to be political, it can get political really quickly. And so it's interesting in a DAO structure when you don't have a quote-unquote CEO that... either the community ethos will be away from politics and you'll get kind of shunned and banned or whatever for politicking, or there's no one to say, don't do that. And in which case it can get out of hand really quickly. So there, you know, if you have a bad CEO, it's probably better to be a DAO. And if you have a really good CEO, there are advantages to having, you know, somebody making the decisions. I'm also fascinated to see, and I don't know if you've seen anything on this side yet, but can a DAO build products that are as good as, you know, something with a little bit more centralized control? Like products are traditionally made by a visionary and then a team who has a clear roadmap and all of those types of things. And is it possible to do that in a more decentralized way? I mean, even, you know, Solana itself, one of the things that attracts me about the project, and I'm again, not a decentralization maxi by any stretch of the imagination, is that you were involved, right? And like when there were code errors, you were getting in there, you're telling people how to fix them and all of that. And I've talked to a bunch of people since I read that piece who are building things on Solana who cite that as one of the reasons that they like building on Solana, is that the team is there to kind of help when there are errors and help direct them towards best practices. So I don't know. I think something like that model is probably going to succeed.
I can only get blame myself.
Exactly.
At the end of the day, yeah. Balaji like had this quote that I've used it a bunch of times, that like decentralization is not the absence of leadership, it's the abundance of leadership. And I kind of love it. I also feel like that because of Bitcoin and it's like history, people started assuming that disorganization also meant like that it was required for decentralization, which I think is bullshit too.
Yeah. How do you view kind of DAO versus social token, or I guess more just kind of governance versus upside sharing?
I think like tokens are social networks almost first, and then anything else later. Because like any community, like it's all contracts, like all this open source software is reusable. Like I can take Uniswap, fork it, and then stick some random token on it. It's as good as Uniswap. You cannot tell me that it's worse in any way. Right? Like it's the same thing, right? So
someone should do that.
Yeah. And then that community takes it in a different product direction, right? For whatever reason. I think that like really fast fail is probably the most important part of decentralization. Anybody can fork you and then just take it in a different direction and form a community around it.
I agree. Which project was it that Justin Sun tried to take over and then everybody just stopped using it?
Steam. Yeah. Steam. Yeah. And that is, I think, part of the beauty of the space, right? Is you can't like, you can only be a benevolent dictator. As soon as you lose the benevolent part, like they're like, well, so everything's open, F off.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Did you follow the sushi saga?
I didn't follow it in real time. I went back and looked at it kind of after the fact, but would not consider myself a sushi expert.
Do you think that we're going to see like these communities stick around for the long haul, like Uniswap, et cetera? Like, is that...
I think that is the billion-dollar, trillion-dollar, whatever number you want to put on it, question that I mean, I was kind of alluding to before with these network effects being replaced by things that pick up network effects even faster and faster. I think that's the blessing and the curse. I was talking about this with somebody the other day where like Facebook, you could remove every single person working on Facebook except for the person who made sure that the servers were up, and people would keep using it for a long, long time. If the people kind of disappeared from SushiSwap or Uniswap or wherever, it just kind of fades away and they move on to the next thing and that takes off. So I think virality in crypto has been proven. Like you can get viral really, really quick. Defensibility over a very long time horizon, I think, is still TBD.
Where does that defensibility come from in Facebook, in your mind? Like it...
In Facebook, I mean, Facebook's a clear kind of network effects one where I guess if everybody decided to stop, if the people on the network decided to stop using it, it would go away. But there's not a clear place that you would all go when you have, maybe there's switching costs too, because you have your whole network mapped and they won't actually let it be portable. Like to your point, you can fork anything. You know, you should be able to fork the relationship graph and all of that over time as people build new mechanics to make that happen. And when you can just bring your whole kind of relationship graph with you across Web3, then maybe you just all go to the next place, or maybe there's not even kind of a place, right? And it is just that your wallet at some point keeps track of all the connections that you have. And so maybe the wallet is the kind of central point of, you know, where a lot of the value accrues and the thing that makes everything portable. But I don't, I'm not exactly sure. What do you think?
I feel like humans are, you know, when I first saw Facebook, I thought, this is like a shitty news group. I can run my own mail server and spam my friends.
Yep.
And then you realize that like normal people don't want to run their own mail servers or news groups.
Yeah.
And that like you centralize around convenience. Where do things centralize around convenience and cryptos for me been really tough to pin down. Like NFTs especially are like a really good example of people jumping from one set to another, but kind of still maintaining that both, right? Like they're able to be in multiple places at the same time. I can be a degen ape and like a monkey MBS member at the same time.
Where do you think that ends up? Like where do you think people end up centralizing, or do they not?
I'm not sure. This is like, again, a trillion dollar question. I feel like if we get to, you know, 300-400 million people with self-custody with wallets that are doing stuff, we'll start seeing those patterns of like, okay, this is like the Facebook. It's the social graph or the, I don't know, the super connected node or something.
Yeah. I wrote about this a couple weeks ago. I wrote a piece called The Interface Phase. And it was like a little bit like of a high kid post where I was like, what are the interfaces going to be? But just the fact that, you know, like the first internet needed Netscape and needed a graphical interface. Web 2 needed, you know, things like Dig and Facebook that were interactive for like that kind of capability, the read-write interface to really be there. And I don't think Web3 has gotten there yet. I do think that either a wallet-based thing, and I don't know what that looks like, and I'm not smart enough to figure out what that looks like, or a kind of metaverse. And I think it's such an interesting kind of mistake of history or just a coincidence of history that the tech for the metaverse and Web3 are kind of like peaking at the same time. But a world in which, you know, like one of the things I think crypto does well is give physical-ish characteristics to digital things. And so I think an interface that makes that clear will have a lot of value in just making a lot of the stuff that feels a little more ethereal feel more kind of real and tangible. And like actually there will be physical places that people meet up and all of that.
So I think what's interesting about crypto is that it's more like Ultima Online. Like when I was playing that game, I got a mental model of the map and the ownership of those items because it was persistent. Like I would go to the thing and I would change something and then come back and it was still there. And your brain, I think, just rapidly like just plugs it into the rest of the stuff that you interacts with. Like if you get a lot of humans all doing this together, I think they'll kind of start forgetting that it's nothing more than a bunch of computers.
Totally. I mean, it's interesting. Like even I forget the name of the book, but there's a book about the memory competitions and, you know, the world memory championships. And the way that they memorize things is by putting different objects throughout a house and then walking through that house. So we are, I think, a lot better at memorizing things and grokking things spatially than we are. And, you know, maybe this is just me talking as a non-technical person, but like just picturing kind of computer networks without something, you know, some physical reference point.
I don't have as good of a mental model of like space on crypto Twitter or like social networks, you know. It's not a map to me, like in my mind. Yeah. But with like something like experiments like DeFi Land and stuff, I think that actually might bridge that because of this ownership thing. And I honestly think it's the fact that I can modify stuff and come back and see it like and feel that I'm doing it.
Totally. Yeah, people like building and showing progress and all of that. How do you, I'm going to turn the mic again. How do you view Solana at this point in terms of kind of DeFi versus the cultural side of things or like the metaverse side of things? And
We don't. Like, I think to us, DeFi was always like, I thought was an important part because you look at like any kind of markets, NASDAQ, those are the obvious ones. Oh yeah, that's probably going to be on some kind of blockchain. But advertisement, right, is like Google shows you a page, they take your data, sell it on an ad exchange, and that's a market that's centralized right now. How do you disintermediate it? Well, you can do that with cryptography, right? And like a replicated censorship resistant database. That's it. Like you can break those things down into marketplaces and remove the middleman. And that I think is kind of how we think about it. Is like where does that make sense? And culture NFTs feel like that non-skeuomorphic social networks. Like it's not somebody that's stuck Twitter with coins. These are like organically sprung up, right? Totally. Like they're like, you know, lodges in the whatever 1700s, like I'm part of this like Masonic lodge or this club or whatever, right? Like now I'm a, you know, DJ ape or whatever.
Totally. And right now, I guess that, you know, often manifests itself in Discord where people are kind of hanging out. Do you think, I've had this conversation with people before in this debate, do you think there needs to be a decentralized Discord where this lives, or like where do you think all of this ends up living?
No, I honestly don't think so. Like this is I thought like a year ago, I thought somebody needs to build a decentralized Twitter, decentralized instant messaging. It all needs to be like the working mechanics of it being decentralized or on chain don't change the social impact of it. You're still like talking to people. What does it matter where you talk to them, right? Like who cares?
Totally.
it's like I think stuff where you can start making like connected modifications of the same state, that like mental model of like, hey, we're all doing this thing over here, that becomes a place, and that's where people actually do things, but who cares where they talk about it?
Yeah. And I don't think you can find a more minimally extractive corporation than Discord. Like, less dollars per user than anybody.
Yeah. They're pretty awesome. The high fidelity audio and stuff like that, I think is pretty cool. I think that, you know, legit gamers, they build it for gamers.
it's so interesting. And I'm probably going to write about Discord at some point here too, but that I've written something called The Great Online Game before, which is essentially we're all just playing this big video game across the internet. And so it's really funny that Discord, which is built for gamers, is where all of this activity is kind of, it just, like if you're playing a big video game, then the chat app designed for video games makes sense as the place that people kind of gather.
Yeah, crypto and the internet is, at least the internet part of crypto is very much a big video game.
Exactly.
Are you investing mostly in the US, US companies, or all over the place?
I'm investing mostly in the US, but have done a few in India. I've done Sweden. I've done Canada. Very open to doing anywhere around the world.
Do you feel like there's been a shift towards kind of everything becoming Silicon Valley, that it doesn't really matter anymore at this point?
The internet is Silicon Valley, a more kind of amorphous idea is Silicon Valley at this point. But, you know, I'm in New York. I'm probably 30 minutes away. I'm in Park Slope, and the crypto hub has become kind of Williamsburg. And I talk to all those people all the time, and I never take the 30-minute trip over to Williamsburg because I have Twitter and I have Discord and I'm pretty much right there with them. So I don't think physical place matters nearly as much. Gathering in physical places is awesome. I think like the idea of, you know, conferences and quarterly team meetups and all of that kind of stuff is absolutely going to explode. There's a really fun thing about only knowing somebody on the internet and then meeting them in person and feeling like you've known each other for a long time. But I don't think the physical place where you all live all the time matters that much.
Yeah. And I think what's weird is like, I have a sneaking suspicion that like the remote work world, like everybody's working remote, is actually going to mean more people travel and get together. And
and it's not just going to be like FaceTime and waiting around the office and sitting, like when you're together, you're together. And then when you're working, your head's down working. And I kind of like that.
Do you think people are more efficient that way? Or is that like the natural state?
It depends how many Discords you're in, frankly. Like, you know, I was before this call, I was supposed to be writing, and I've gotten obsessed with the Wanderers NFT project. So I just bought another Wanderer and then was trying to figure out how to display it in my cyber gallery. And so I think like there's not somebody looking over my shoulder. So, you know, in that sense, like maybe it allows you to get a little bit more distracted. But I also think, you know, a lot of things kind of coming together at the same time. More and more people are responsible for themselves. And so if I don't work now, then I'm working all weekend and I have to get the same stuff done anyway. And so I do think that's kind of hopefully the natural state of things, is that people are allowed to get their shit done when they want to.
Are NFTs like what you're looking at mostly in crypto? Like, is that the most exciting part?
NFTs are, I think, very exciting to me. Like my first internship was on an energy trading desk. Should want to get into DeFi, and I feel like I'm going to get wrecked unless I can spend all of my time getting into DeFi. So I've largely kind of steered clear. I do think that NFTs are super interesting for the reasons that you suggested. I mean, I think that, you know, they are a little bit like a social network. I think it's going to be really fascinating to see how these things evolve and the worlds that get built around them. And they're just kind of, they're the most tangible crypto thing out there, right? Like you have an item. I like these Wanderers because there's audio and they're like these 8-second clips. And so like the richer that you can make them, I think the better. And over time, more and more and more things will just be ownable digitally. And I think that's very cool.
I love the trend of like 2D art first, kind of like really low res, because it's like a forcing function on creativity. Right, it's actually hard to make something look good than that low,
totally
low fidelity. So I'm a fan of like watching the space kind of self almost like evolve, right? Like it's definitely going to get better, right? You're going to have like full scale renders of 3D models and high production stuff in like a few years, but it's exciting to see what it is now, right?
Totally. I have another portfolio company called Arcole that's doing, essentially it's trying to replace the design software that companies use. So Autodesk has Revit to do 3D modeling. They're doing kind of the Figma version of that. But then could you just take this physical building that somebody's designed for the real world, turn it into an NFT and let somebody bring it into the digital world? Like I would love to own, you know, the Chrysler building and then bring it into my world.
Skeuomorphism.
So there is an interesting, because I thought about that too when I was trying to write about the interfaces. I was like, why are we even thinking about buildings and worlds at all? Like why, like if you don't have to follow the rules of physics, then why do you? But I do think through our conversation earlier about maps, like reference points are also important. So you need to kind of one step at a time go away from things that people are familiar with.
Yeah. Cool, man. So this was a really awesome conversation. Thank you so much for being on the show and like really getting into it.
100%. This was fun. Thank you.